We're all lit up.
Let's do it.
Welcome to Geeks Without God with Nick Glover, Tim Wick, and Molly Glover.
We're geeks without God. We're geeks without God. We don't recognize moral authority. We don't accept divine superiority. We're geeks without God.
This week on Geeks Without God, our returning guest, Carr Hagerman, is with us to answer our new 5 questions and talk about trigger warnings and safe spaces.
We're geeks without God. We're geeks without God. We're geeks without God.
Welcome to Geeks Without God. I'm your host, Nick Glover. I'm joined, as always, by my co-hosts, Tim Wick.
Hello, I am just one of his co-hosts.
That's true. And the other co-host is Molly Glover.
That's me.
By Molly process Glover. Of elimination.
Molly Glover.
Yay. Hey. The illustrious. And our guest this week is a returning guest, a friend of the show, Carr Hagerman.
Uh-huh. Hold on. Let me see. I just saw this. Seeing how much I'm getting paid to be here tonight. Good, let's go.
Yeah. You might know him as the rat catcher at the Minnesota Renaissance Festival.
Management's here.
That's right. our manager out there, whatever you
the
want to call him.
The entertainment director, voiceover work. Writer.
Book
writer. Yeah. Man of many hats.
Photographer as well.
Photographer. That's right.
As is evidenced by the headshot we took with
you. Yeah.
I've got a headshot.
Yeah, it's a really good one.
It's nice to be back with you guys. You know, one of the things I enjoyed about the last time here is the conversations here are, you know, just really easy to have. And
we like to provide a safe space.
See, that's funny because what we're going to cover today, what we want to talk about, what Carr wants
nice
to talk about
segue.
Is the concept of trigger warnings.
Can we warn our audiences right now?
Yeah, actually, I was about to say that. For real, though, we are going to be discussing all sorts of stuff.
Yeah.
So there you go.
Yeah.
So
there you
go. Be warned.
And I'm sorry I interrupted you, but I couldn't.
Yeah, no, that was
totally
great.
Fine.
Yeah.
Well, it started, you know, this conversation started with I was reading some of the business that you, Molly, you were going through with Khan.
Yes.
And
I did the Shame Walk Cersei costume with Nick and our friend Lori. And I was dressed as Cersei with her hair all cut off and covered in garbage. I was not naked at all. In fact, I was so double plus unnaked that even if someone had tried to rip all my clothes off me, I would have remained unnaked.
Which, by the way, would mean I wouldn't really want to be there. If you were naked, I would have gone out of my way.
You haven't seen me naked, clearly, because you'd be like, no thanks.
Wait a minute, I think I did.
Oh, wait, yeah, you did.
Yeah, you did.
Oh, yeah, you took those naked pictures of us.
Yes, I have those. So let's remember the conversation as we go on. So anyway. So I was reading about this, and the reason I said I really want to come on and talk to you guys because we were all kind of sharing our frustration about mm-hmm. this. And my position at the Renaissance Festival, first off, in 1974 when I started playing the Ratcatcher, or 75 actually, my character was born out of a sort of total irreverence and a lot of very, as Tim would remember, very politically incorrect kind of things I would say to people. Sort of borderline sexist and anti-family.
Borderline.
I mean, it was just, I was really after anything I could.
You honk a horn like it's your dick, and make fun of people, call people
real fabulous.
Crass and spitting and gross.
And never really getting any letters of complaint. In fact, my following grew from it, in part because I think people knew, and this is sort of the point, that in my heart was something different. Okay, so I could make that distinction that people knew I wasn't serious.
The festival was different back then too.
Well, yes, but that's sort of my
point.
Over the past 40 years, what's happened is even though we still have a segment of our audience that likes that kind of edgy, irreverent humor, whether it's Vilification Tennis or me or Arthur Greenleaf Holmes or a number mm-hmm. of other people that we provide the venue to, the letters have grown. Not only from customers who are now offended by things that once upon a time would have seen pedestrian, would not have seen problematic. Mm-hmm. Now we see people going, well, I didn't really like that comment. Now that's been worrisome enough, but even more worrisome is that the very, what I would call progressive mindset of many of our entertainers who used to be just like hippie, love all, whatever, wherever, however you wanted to hang was okay, now have become... sort of the traffic cop of language.
Yes.
And so from my position, both as a performer now, as artistic director, it looks like there's people unrolling barbed wire all over the place, metaphorically around language, so that if we say something or do something that's offensive, we have to have action. And I'll tell you one quick story that where this all set up, and it sets it up pretty good. Twig the Fairy.
Yeah.
Arguably one of the most innocent characters we have.
Probably
the most kid-friendly character
clearly,
I've ever seen. I
can't think of anyone more kid-friendly.
Right. And a persona that is, she's beautiful and she's, you know...
gentle.
Yeah, and innocent and all those things. So shortly, the year she started, she knew Gordy. Now, Gordy, for those of you that don't know, Gordy Boudreau originally came to our festival. I brought him in from Texas. He played Scratch the Beggar. He would sit on the ground and bang a pan on his head and get coins for it.
And was literally what he did.
Yeah, that was it. But he figured
brilliant.
Out. It's basically a dunk tank. Bang, go under and say something funny, bang, bang. And he would be made. Remember, he used to carry around these big flour sacks with dollar signs on them full of money. And everybody else would go, why did I think of that? Shit, I'm an idiot, right?
Yeah.
Well, there was he made some comment about Twig filleting an erect donkey on the Facebook page.
Arthur Greenleaf Holmes.
Scratch the Beggar.
Oh, his Scratch the Beggar, okay.
There was some joke about her filleting a donkey, and it was, a lot of us thought it was really funny. It was very much in your face.
Because how could that be?
It enraged a number of our cast members to the point where when I showed up at Cast Call, which we do every, we do a Cast Call every morning before the festival starts for people that don't know, I was met with entertainers whose name I won't mention who were red-faced and right in my face going, you need to fire him now. That kind of language is inappropriate. And so,
did any of the angry people bother to ask?
Well, Kat came up and came up on stage, and I brought her up on I brought her up on stage, and I said, "Are you, upset about this?" And she said, "Fuck no, where's the donkey?" right? So she didn't care. But where that started then, that this sort of sense that now inside our own home we couldn't say things, and that has led to a kind of backstage anxiety even, and all of us here backstage say some very outrageous things.
Oh, I say them on stage sometimes.
Right, no, but I'm saying but backstage.
I get paid $100 to sing one verse of a song
that is disgusting.
Really disgusting.
It is really bad.
But you see, if you move backstage where anything used to go, now, to go back to that metaphor, there's barbed wire kind of being up there. So if I walked up to you and said, well, you stupid bitch or something like that.
And I was like,
I look around, I go, I could get a letter for that.
Yep.
I could get in trouble, not only up the food chain. So let's say somebody who is triggered by something I say, and I mean this, if it's whatever the joke is, it doesn't matter my intent now. If I say the words and I don't put up a banner or a billboard or announce it ahead of time or look around, I could be liable for hurting somebody.
What's really... some more context, some more things to think about, and we're going to get into it, but a little bit, I'm sure more, but like when you started out as artistic director, Carr, you and I had several exchanges about vilification tennis, which it was fascinating because you were suddenly in a position where stuff that you didn't really give a crap about, you were getting a ton of pressure.
Right.
And others.
Not the owner so much because he's sort of aloof enough. He didn't really know.
Sure.
But from other people on my management team, that's true.
Who were concerned about the content and nature of that show. And,
put a finite point on it, they wanted it to go away. I was asked to get rid of it, which I was never on my agenda.
Right. Yeah. And there was that negotiation about, well, what can we do and what can we not do? And I'd always been very, very aware of a line, and I'd always been very aware of when I felt we crossed it and when I felt that we'd stayed
on the right side.
Like last Sunday when we crossed it.
Last Sunday.
When we crossed it, when I said cunt 7 times in a row.
Yeah, but you weren't the first one that said cunt.
No, I wasn't.
I think that's the important part.
It is. It was Susie's fault. That's what we should focus on.
Keep going.
I'd always been, really careful about when you cross, trying to figure out when you cross the line. But, and it is a delicate thing, I completely understand. Some people don't want to be subjected to that kind of humor. Mm-hmm. And that's fair. And that's fair.
It is fair if you walk up to a show without any preamble, assuming that it's going to be you're at a family-friendly event,
sure.
And all of a sudden she walks up on stage and starts shouting cunt.
But now we have been listed.
No, but my point is, if it's not set up.
Right, and we've been listed as loose cannon in the program.
Yeah.
So at this point, it's like, I mean, if you just wander up to a show
but you also announce it.
But here's one of the
most... He announces it before, but the thing is, that's his announcement about trigger warning, this is bad. If you get offended, you will be. If you don't get offended, you certainly will be. All that. That happens 25 minutes before third round.
Right.
And third round is where shit gets serious.
Yeah. So, I mean, yes, if someone were to... People don't exist without context.
Right.
If you're at a Renaissance festival, there you have a whole bunch of context points there. If you see people on stage and they're shouting at each other and you can't hear what they're saying and they look angry and people are going, oh, these are all context points.
Yep.
No one is sucker punched with adult comedy. Maybe some people are more clueless than others, but to go to the costumes at Convergence thing.
Yeah.
Not only did we research all of the rules for it and
yes.
both the city, state,
and convention rules.
And hotel rules to make sure we didn't break any rules, which we didn't. We also didn't do it until late at night.
Yeah, we waited until after midnight.
Now, other things that happen late at night at Convergence are sexy girls dancing in public at the Cow Asylum.
Yeah.
Well, in the years past, there was an awful lot more than that.
Straight-up fucking in the hallways.
Which was not okay and got shut down.
Yeah, there used to be an entire floor dedicated to
BDSM.
Stuff
you'd sign waivers and all this.
Now there's a distinction I wanted to make about vilification.
Yeah,
trigger warnings or trigger language. This whole notion of triggers and respect for through language for what I would call public discourse. That's been around for a long time.
Mm-hmm,
so
sure.
I think that's less problematic. I think the word cunt is less problematic to me because I think. I rarely get a comment about it. It is now the victim language that becomes, it is when you use a term that somehow incites somebody that's been a victim of something.
That makes fun of a marginalized group.
And that now becomes a quagmire.
Yeah.
A mess. And that's what was getting me about you guys and what I was watching what you were doing. Is like, I know I'm wearing this out, but the more we put padding up and the more we...
Yes.
If we decorate the world that everything is part of victim language, we're fucked. Our popular culture is screwed.
Yeah.
We have to really ask ourselves the hard question. First of all, how many people are actually victims in our culture that have triggers? If you look at the science on this, Geek Feminist is the first place that this shows up, the wiki there, where that this term shows up. There's no unified science on it. And when you look at the numbers, it is so monumentally small that now it starts to feel like triggering has become a cudgel for people who have a fucking agenda.
And that's the thing I want to go on clear and fucking obvious record that there are people who have PTSD and other anxieties and they have triggers and there are things that trigger them and that happens. And I don't want anyone to think that we are dismissing that or saying that isn't real.
I am saying it is largely a small subset of people.
So,
not to minimize
correct.
It, but it's
so
not
much,
a big group
much
of people.
Like how people. So I have been diagnosed with bipolar disorder 1, and I will tell you there is nothing and autism. There's nothing more frustrating than when someone says, "I'm feeling so manic depressive today," because what they mean is I'm having mood swings,
right.
Or I'm so bipolar, because what they mean is they like comedy and drama. Like that's the thing.
I get that a lot when every time some asshole misspells a word, I'm so dyslexic today.
Yeah.
It's like that's funny because I'm dyslexic every day.
Yeah, I don't mean to be autistic, but like, what are you even saying to me?
Right.
So no, these are things that have always been happening. People say this all the time. Now it's happening with triggers. Like, and so that word has become co-opted. And what sucks about it is I know people who are genuinely triggered genuinely triggered by things. But those, everyone I know who genuinely is, because they had PTSD, because they've been abused, because they were raped, because of these horrible things that happened to them, they all are like, yeah, that's my stuff though. So I know when it's going to happen. And when it happens, I know how to deal with it. And I take myself out of the equation. And I have the people in my life. And I have my methods to deal with it. None of them have ever said, and therefore, the things that trigger me should go away forever.
Well, you know,
and that's what the difference.
Where this is really coming out of is the university culture, and that's where
this, I mean, that article is what made us talk about it. Was right. The idea that they're removing even like the word rape from they won't even talk about books where rapes happen. They don't even want to watch.
Talking about sexual violence prosecution and defense in law school, and having students say you can't talk about defending a rapist that triggers me. It's like, well, guess what? If you're going to be a lawyer and you're going to pass the bar, this is
learn. More so, what are we going to do with literature? What are we going to do with our universities? What are we going to do with museums? What are we going to do with art? What are we going to do with anything that everything out there, it seems, has the potential to make a statement to someone.
The world is pointy. The world is pointy and it has sharp edges, and that's how you learn.
I think you have to kind of differentiate the use of something as far as trigger warnings. To differentiate a trigger warning from a statement that something should not exist.
Yes.
So
correct.
So here's the thing.
What is that? What's that distinction? I don't follow.
If somebody, when a trigger warning is literally saying, hey, what I'm going to do is I'm going to talk about rape in a graphic sense, and that might not be something you want
to
read.
Yep, the preamble to Vill 10. The preamble to Vill 10 at Convergence. So at Convergence,
Did like a 5-minute.
It was 10 this year, Tim, because you went really, you were like, let me be very clear. If you are triggered by anything, chances are we're going to trigger you. And people laugh, but it was not a joke.
I did it as a joke in a funny way.
We made posters.
Statement in a funny
way. We made posters this year that said, because it was dystopians was the theme. So our posters this year said, citizen alert, let it be known that the Vilification Tennis performance is under official trigger warning. It was a joke, but also being very serious.
We're comedy people. We can pass along legitimate information in a comedic context.
And people were like, they're making fun of trigger warnings.
Well, good.
But we weren't. If we don't do
a trigger warning, then we're assholes. But if we do a trigger warning, making fun of people with trigger warnings.
But here's what I'm trying to make. The distinction that I think it is fair to ask for somebody to warn you that there might be something that is going to trigger something within them.
Yes.
It is not fair to say, therefore, anything that might trigger anyone should not exist.
Right.
Yes. It's
the fair problem enough. With the Circe shame walk is it goes from this triggered somebody, even though when you read everything that was written about it, it doesn't feel like it actually did trigger anyone, except for people who didn't see it, who borrowed trouble for people who didn't
see it. Critics didn't even see it.
One or two people on that 1,000-comment thread that ended up being in the Mary Sue.
Unbelievable.
One or two people did say they saw it, and it made them feel bad, or it offended them. Not a single one said, and the one who did say it triggered me, I said, I'm genuinely asking, were you once walked from a church to a castle naked and shamed by a church and pelted with garbage? And she was like, well, no, but it's you're shaming women. It's like, but I'm consenting
but you
to
are,
it.
But no, but you are not actually shaming women.
Yes, except for when they started shaming me for doing it.
But
that's when they started shaming women.
Yeah, and the problem is you have a freedom to say that you're offended.
Yes.
But you don't have the freedom to say everything that offends me cannot exist. Yeah,
but to use her description to say that the shaming women... For instance, if I go to a violent movie, say, wow, the violence in that movie was off the charts. It's actually not violence. It's a fucking movie. There is no violence. It's just...
No one was actually shaming a woman.
No one was actually shaming a woman.
Not only that...
If it's a... art or it's an expression, you can say it represents those things. Yeah. It's a representation. But does the larger question, does a representation, then do we have to warn about any potential reservation? I mean, TVs become that way. Movies have become that way. Books, what are we going to, all of our books now in the beginning of a chapter, here's the trigger warnings that come with this. If we go down this foxhole, where do we stop?
What frustrates me the most about the costume situation is that, first of all,
how did you feel about it?
I thought it was fun. I had a great time. The crowd response was amazing. People were shouting, brother fucker, whore, you know, like, because that's part of the show.
One woman ran and got popcorn from Cinema Rex.
Came back and threw popcorn
at Molly as we went.
Brittany went crazy. She was like, brother fucker, whore! And it was amazing. And afterwards, she hugged me. She was like, thank you. That was so fun. Yeah. But so what bugs me is a bunch of people on that thread were saying, if you had done something else, if you'd flipped it, if it was a man walking, getting shamed, that would have been okay. If it was...
How does that become okay?
If you'd made it another character who was male, some other fantasy, whatever character, that would have been okay. Even though in the show, the first time it happens to a man.
In the church.
In the first time it happens, it's the high septon who is being shamed for his whoring ways because he sleeps around and he's taking money and bribes. The exact same thing is done to him. And if we had done that, I don't think anyone would have said a fucking word. And that's what makes me crazy, because that's sexist as shit.
It really is. And
that makes me angry, because it's like, you don't get to either say none of it is okay, it's never okay, this is a horrible thing. You don't get to say, if you'd done R2-D2 getting shamed by C-3PO, that would have been okay, or whatever
else. That's been our philosophy with Vilification Tennis all along. My basic, you know, when somebody says to me, well, I don't know if you should do this kind of joke, I'm like, okay, well, the minute you tell me the kind of joke that we shouldn't do, you're implying that everything else is okay.
Yep.
And you know what? It's not, okay, fine. Slut-shaming women, I agree, is a bad thing. But isn't calling people fat a bad thing?
Yep.
Isn't, I mean, all of the whole idea
is... You're setting up a hierarchy of victimhood.
We're setting up the fact that we're being awful people. And if you aren't, if you're going to, like, sort of... cherry pick what kind of awful people we're allowed to be.
I think I might differ a little bit here in that with you guys, because I just, the whole premise seems suspicious to me.
When I went to see, I remember when I went and saw
The Aristocrats.
Yeah.
What struck me was how at some point, it was going to be rated X. Right?
Yep.
But all it is language.
Yep.
That's all it is. I know you could say they're containers of meaning. You put them together, they mean things, they conjure up sort of. It's just language, or you could say it's really all language.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So words. And so when you read stuff like Stuff of Thought, Steven Pinker and all that, you we're built with certain context. I just want more freedom of language.
Yes.
I think it's okay with me that a portion of our population is offended or may be triggered by stuff in lieu of the opposite, which is a kind of condescending containment where everybody has to be fair, everything has to be safe. And now writing is fucked, art is fucked, everything gets screwed in that light.
You have the right to get offended. You do not have the right to not be offended. And that's the difference.
But we're setting up that precedent.
And that's what I don't like. And so, yes, and I agree with you on language, because one of the things that, the reason that, okay, so here's what happened Sunday, on the Sunday third round. Susie said something, some punchline joke that ended with cunt. And it was like, oh, and Tim, as the judge, is like, duh, you can't say that word.
There's one word I won't let you say.
And we immediately go, is it cunt?
Yeah.
Is the word cunt? Should we not say cunt?
Were people going crazy?
Oh, yeah, they were loving it.
It was hilarious. And we get done, and they're all done, and I said, and the word I won't let you say is fuck. And then on we go.
Yeah, and so it was super, and it's super great. But the thing is, we've talked about this before in the show, I hate the fact that it's not okay to say fuck, but it's okay to say freak or frick.
Frickin'.
It's the
dang
same
it versus damn
thing.
It. Shoot versus
What's
shit.
What's the difference between the reek sound and the uck sound? It's the same sound. The intention is the same.
Everybody knows what an F-bomb is.
And that's what I don't understand.
Yeah.
Why can I say, no freaking way, and that's okay, but not no fucking way?
Right.
It makes no sense to me. And we're giving words power that they don't deserve.
Is it the same with censor bars for nudity?
Yes.
If there's a censor bar there, it's like, we all know it's a dick.
I have no problem with the human body. I don't see any problem with naked bodies. I don't understand why we do that.
Some of the trigger, these people that are they're hung up on trigger warnings and some of the people that were the zealots that were getting all of it, don't they share a little in common with evangelicals that don't want to blaspheme?
Yeah, zealots are zealots.
Yeah, zealots are zealot. I mean, it's still kind of a blasphemy.
I mean, I guess my point is there's a spectrum. I know plenty of people who...
Who's on the spectrum? Oh, yeah, that's right.
Yeah, me for sure. I raise my hand, radio.
Both of my kids. Both of my kids are on the spectrum. But
not Tim, though.
No.
Sorry.
No. I've never been diagnosed, so it must not be true.
You're fine.
I feel like it's not a black or white issue. There are times where I think of trigger warnings, I was talking to Nick about this over the weekend, and I was like, well, what if, say, I'm afraid of heights, okay? Mm-hmm. Which doesn't mean I don't go up in tall things. I do it all the time because mm-hmm. fuck being afraid of heights. I want to go to the top of that thing.
Yeah. And it still scares you.
It still scares me.
And makes you feel uncomfortable.
And makes me feel uncomfortable. But let's say I went on a trip somewhere and somebody put a blindfold on me and said, I'm going to take you somewhere. And it's going to be a surprise and you're really going to like it. Now, if what they were doing was taking me to the top of a really tall building and then taking off off the blindfold, I'd probably be pretty pissed because I didn't have the opportunity to mentally prepare myself.
Right.
But language, that's actually going to a physical place. The language is absolutely a construct.
But language can elicit that kind of a response. What?
No one's saying it can't, but at the same time, this is my problem. We need to have more personal agency.
Yeah.
And that
emotional responsibility.
Yes, and I know, Nick, you feel strongly about this.
And politeness and things that we can choose to do as you know.
But like your rights, there's that famous saying of your rights end at the end of your nose, kind of a thing. And like to some degree, like it's not that I don't have I can say whatever I want and you can tell me I'm an asshole for saying it. You're welcome to say to me, that triggers me, fuck you, I don't want to be your friend, I hate you. And I'll say, okay. And I can say, I'm sorry that triggered you.
Or not.
But that doesn't mean you get to stop me from doing what I do.
There are people that don't think vilification tennis should be performed at Convergence. They think
or ever.
Convergence claims it's a safe space and vilification tennis is not a safe space. It's like, well, Convergence doesn't claim every place is a safe space and that you must be safe from everything at all times.
How is vilification tennis unsafe in any way?
Yeah.
Because it's just language.
It is, exactly.
No one is
it's consenting
being
adults.
Hurt. No one is in any danger.
It's not a film. It's not a rape reenactment.
There aren't actual pedophiles there. There aren't actual...
There might be, actually. Honestly, statistically, there might be pedophiles in the audience.
and if there are, we're making fun of them.
Exactly.
We're saying being a pedophile is bad. How dare we?
Yeah.
There is intellectual and emotional personal responsibility. I think to some degree, people are responsible for their own emotional state and their own intellectual state.
No one can make you feel anything.
But no one can make you feel anything that you don't let them feel.
I'll bring back this. If you Google all this online, there's scarce evidence that any of this really, in psychiatry, they're going, this whole notion of trigger is not very grounded yet.
We
know that there are some extreme cases where people feel that, but you're talking about a very, very small number of people. So my question then is, do you manage your language on the notion of a distinct and very small minority of people that may be offended, or are we playing to an audience of people who really aren't?
Mm-hmm.
That this is just a political thing that they have.
Well, it's a buzzword now.
A buzzword.
It's entirely political.
Let me ask this, though. This weekend, Tony got up and talked about addressing trans people at the festival. When you're not mm-hmm. entirely sure what gender they're presenting and offering an option of gender-neutral language, which mm-hmm. I thought was a very positive thing. That's something that you can do that shows you give a shit about those people. It's not about a trigger warning, but it is changing your language to recognize the changing landscape that we're in. I mean,
if you want to, but we've been doing this for a long time. I mean, none of us go out into the street at the festival, look at a black person, go, oh, you know, what this nigger doing here, right? I mean, you would never say that.
To some degree,
because
too, though.
That word now is actually, if you think about it, a trigger for a lot of people. Like, it's not just, like, it sets up all kinds of anxiety.
There's a lot of history, there's a lot of attachment.
Yeah. But at the same time...
we have been editing a long time.
It's true, but at the same time, there are... I think in that instance, Tim, we have...
Also,
I have a lot of blood friends, but I mean, we know a lot of trans people. We have a lot of trans family and friends, people, adopted family I love, and I think that if any of them were accidentally called the wrong gender, their reaction would be, fuck that guy. And not like...
Or to correct them.
And say, or to just be
someone
like...
Someone says the lady, and they'd be like, Lord.
Or they'd be like, whatever. You know, and it's frustrating, but at the same time, it's like
Andrea.
Yeah.
I frequently, when addressing her, will say him, because I have a history with him. And I asked him just a few weeks ago, I go, how do you feel about that? He goes, a lot of people had a history both ways. I know what I am.
She knows she is 100, and it's not hard for me to switch pronouns, but at the same time, I made some slips with your brother when your brother was transitioning, and a couple times I said Jamie, she, and most of that is because...
if you'd known, mm-hmm. like if I'd known Andy as a woman mm-hmm. from the beginning, I don't think I'd have that pronoun problem.
Right.
Pronoun trouble.
But at the same time...
it's habit.
It is habit.
It's muscle memory.
It's etched in your brain. And no offense, Carl, but the older you are, the less flexible you are about that kind of things in the brain.
What's frustrating me, I made this comment on that cosplay thread when this woman, one of the earlier comments, before it all devolved and I stopped kind of joining in, but at the beginning, when a woman said, actually, I saw you, and you made me feel uncomfortable, and I felt bad because to me it represented the shaming of women, and I felt that it made me feel bad. And she went on a whole thing, and I thought it was, I'm not gonna say it was bullshit, but I was like, all right. And what I said in return, I didn't say I was sorry that I did it. What I said was, I understand, I can empathize. And this is a true story. In the dealer's room this last year, I went to the dealer's room. My dog, Ayn, is named after a very popular sci-fi anime called Cowboy Bebop. And that dog was my fucking life. He was my everything. He saved me. I am alive in part because of that dog and him needing me. And he died. And it was awful. And this had only been maybe 6 months later. And we're in the dealer's room, and he's named after this anime. And one of the taglines from the anime is, see you, space cowboy.
I used to say it to him all the time.
I said it when he died. It was my, like, epitaph for him. And I'm in the dealer's room, and I see a messenger bag with the picture of the cartoon dog, and it says, see you, space cowboy.
Oh, you lost it.
And I got up, and I said to Nick, I gotta go. And I started crying. And in no way did I ever think that shouldn't be here.
Yeah.
Because even though, yes, I was triggered, yes, it was hard, yes, it hurt bad. And I had physical, actual, quantifiable anguish over it. And I took myself out of the situation, and I dealt with it, because that's what adults do. That's what you have to do.
You showed responsibility to yourself and your emotional state.
Your victimization is a wound, and whether it's losing a dog or being victimized. You know, I saw a comedian one time, had one of the worst jokes. It was funny, because you know I came here last time I was with you guys. I talked about my rape.
Yeah.
I was raped by a counselor at a YMCA camp, which is a whole other story, some things going on with that now, but... and this comedian said, I'm going to do an imitation of my science teacher from seventh grade. Y'all ready? And I don't know what he's going to do. He goes, and this is what he said. He goes, now I'm going to do an imitation of my seventh grade science teacher. Okay, Bob, you can pull up your pants now. Don't tell anybody about this. And the crowd laughed. And for a moment I'm like, cause this is almost word for word what my rapist had said to me. I started laughing so hard I could hardly stand it. And but at first it was like
catharsis.
I felt a little bit like, okay, but it was funny, right?
Yeah.
And the crowd fucking, because it was one of those you can't see it where he's going with it. If I had been into this like a convergence, I would have gotten up and left, which would have been appropriate.
Also appropriate.
But should have that comedian gone, I'm now about to do a joke about a boy being raped in school.
Yeah.
Well, there's the punchline's ruined.
Not only that, but sure. You know what? But inappropriate. You standing up and going, "That's not funny. I was raped. That's not funny." No,
so that's humor not. Humor is literally subjective.
Exactly.
It's like more subjective than anything else. I don't know.
All of these things I agree with, and yet I still come back to the fact that if the discourse, there's nothing wrong with the discourse about this. The people saying, you know what? Okay, fine. We don't have any psychiatric evidence. We don't know how many people this is. But saying, you know what? If you're going to write about this, would you do me the favor of warning me before you write about it? There's nothing wrong with asking for that. There's nothing wrong with, I mean, I have no issues with standing up before Bill and doing a 10-minute spiel about the fact, because it's jokey, it's funny, it's a good spiel, the audience laughs, and I don't feel bad about saying, hey, what we're doing is offensive.
But don't you think choosing, society in general, for the most part, now violence being the exception because it's all over TV, it just seems like we've been, since the 50s, we've practiced a kind of public discourse that's relatively safe and polite, and I like that. Where you're going here is, where does this end? I know what you're saying, and you're advocating for that. This commercial contains TV. This commercial contains images of violent car turning.
How about this commercial contains dogs being euthanized? I cried in the bathtub a few weeks ago because someone posted a commercial about a dog waiting for its master, and then and like,
is it the one where it's running, the car's driving
chases
away,
chases the ambulance, and then the woman comes out with the new heart, and the dog recognizes, ended me, fucking ended me.
So I think if I could say it this way, if you're a writer or if you're producing something, you speak then. You have a choice about whether you want to do that or not.
And people have a choice to whether or not they want to consume your product.
Venue makes a difference. Venue, where you do that makes a difference. As a rule, though, I would hope our society doesn't adopt this overly cautious tone. I'm going a little strange direction here. It's one of the reasons why I think Donald Trump is so fascinating. As a figure. I'm not talking about his politics.
Are you
as
a racist?
A figure. No, but as a figure, because he is redefining what is possible about what you say on the public stage in a way that, while I find him grotesque, at the very least, he said shit about people that he's getting away with.
I'd rather him be honest and so we can know him for his true colors as opposed to, like,
No, you're missing
nice.
My point. Look at the other candidates and their very prepared, coached way. While I don't agree with what he says, I kind of want to see more Trumps in the
but
world
that's what
in
I'm
terms
saying.
Of style than I do.
I would like to see more Trumps that aren't assholes.
Well, yeah, you're not talking about the content. I get your raw honesty. You're not talking about the content of the message. You're talking about the method of delivery.
Right.
So I will say, all right, so...
I've said what I've used.
Ron Bauman, friend of the show, Ron Bauman, multiple times on here.
Oh, that guy.
I know, so hang on. So last year, he has this thing called Advice from the Comic Hack that he posts. And I follow him and I follow Scary Moose Tartuga on Facebook. So he posted a thing that was about something about women's bodies and weight. I don't even know. All I know is it showed up on my feed, and the first image on the post was the thumbnail image that just showed up in my feed, and I had no option of seeing it. And it was a woman who weighed about 60 pounds.
Uh-huh.
Full body figure of this woman, and I had anorexia. I was hospitalized for it. It was probably one of the toughest things I ever had to beat. It still fucks me up sometimes. And all I did, I messaged him, and he and I have talked since, and I'm like, I'm a little embarrassed that I did this, but I messaged him and I said, just so you know, the picture that's showing up as the automatic thumbnail that no one can prevent themselves from seeing in your post is pretty triggering for anyone who has anorexia. And I didn't say take it down, and I didn't say that's bad. I just said, I just want you to know. And his response was very like, well, I don't care. Well, thanks for telling me, but, you know, blah, blah, blah. And we had a good discourse on it.
I'm not going to change anything.
I'm not
going to
change it, but I would like to talk more about it. And we had a good discourse on it. But, like, in hindsight, I looked over the old message, and I don't like my language because I did, back that's before this whole trigger warning thing exploded across the social media sphere of, you know, anything is everything. And what, but the thing is, that is a very specific thing that for me, that's a bot, that's, that is like, you know, that image of a woman that emaciated and everything. For me, it was like a brain thing. My brain was like,
but don't you believe that part of your discourse also represents the fact that you've come a long way?
Yes.
And doesn't the world then ultimately present us when we go through that, we're no longer a victim?
Yes. And what I'm getting at is, I think that too many people, and I don't want to blame it all on millennials, but I think to some degree it's a lot of this participation trophy generation thing. But we have been taught lately that we deserve a comfortable life, that we deserve a life with smooth sailing, and that we should not be triggered, we should not be offended. And I disagree. I think that being triggered, being offended, getting angry, having things that you react to, it leads to growth.
Being a grown-up, for Christ's sake.
It leads to personal growth. When I saw that, and it fucked me in the head for a couple days, and it was like, oh, maybe I'm not as out of the water as I thought. Maybe I need to reassess why that got to me. And I did. And that's what I'm saying is that, like, triggers are thorny, and thorns are the things that help you get past. I mean, it's just, you can't just live in a bubble. You can't live comfortable. You won't grow. You won't be anything. You won't develop. That whole, like, puts hair on your chest, builds character thing is not all talk.
No, it matters. We're in a very rough world.
You got raped, and you move past it. There's things that you can adjust
that
and change.
By the way, that doesn't mean I don't get occasionally uncomfortable.
Of course,
there's somebody at the festival that makes jokes continually about it, and they have no idea that I'm actually a little uncomfortable with it, and I don't care.
There's someone at the
festival. Comfort or non-comfort belongs to me.
There's someone at the festival who, when I was about 20 years old, and I was at the festival as a patron, grabbed me, pulled me into drum jam, and started grinding on me, and I was like, no, thank you. And he picked me up and spun me, picked me up physically, moved me around, was like, you should come to my tent tonight, because then we have the real fun. And I was
like, you'll be my VIP, you'll be my
guest, I'll show you everything.
Did Lazarczyk know you then?
But like, when I first started working out there and I saw him, I kind of froze. And Nick was like, what's up? And I'm like, oh, the guy that fucking, like, made me feel very unsafe.
He's probably still at the drum jam.
No, he's a fucking boothie. Fuck that guy. Like, whatever. Like, it doesn't matter. I'm better than him.
So, yeah, I don't think... I think for the most part we're saying trigger warnings aren't bad. Requiring them is maybe over the top. You have
freely giving them is great.
Freely giving them as an optional thing is one thing, but if someone has the right to not do a trigger warning, and you have the right to not support them or their product or their message or whatever.
Yeah.
And so no one is owed a trigger warning for everything.
I'm in that.
I think is kind of...
I agree with that. Tim, how do you feel about that?
I agree that they aren't owed.
But you can be considerate and have them. But it's not necessarily inherently inconsiderate to not have them.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not malicious to not have them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'll close this out by saying I went to Arthur Greenleaf Holmes' show at the festival last week, The Filthy Poet.
Body Poetry, yeah.
And I would urge people to go see it, besides the fact that it's brilliantly written and performed. His setup is exactly, I think, the point. He has filthy poetry. A lot of it is would be offensive. But the first 5 minutes, 10 minutes of his show is a setup of such love, saying, I'm going to do things that are rude, crude, bawdy, and blue. And if you get up and leave, you're not going to be jeered.
Mm-hmm.
You're not going to be yelled at. We're not going to make jokes about you. In fact, we're going to applaud that you have better sense than the rest of us.
That you've
restored a sense of decency to the public discourse by getting up and leaving. And he never violates that principle. That, to me, is a really great way of looking at it.
Yeah.
You can do it in a great way and let people know, and you can do it in forethought, and everybody here agrees, we can't always do that, and God forbid... forbid,
yes,
that we ever live in a world where we live in a world where we require everybody to trigger everything and we have no creativity and freedom left.
I have zero problem with people saying, I don't like that this thing exists.
Yep.
I have tremendous problems with the follow-up of, and therefore it should not.
Yep. That's a succinct way to put it.
With that, we'll move on to our new five questions.
New five questions.
I'm not good at this.
You got this.
You're not good at improv
when you're not in the street?
Well, no, I'm great at improv, but the questions are always like in a column. I'm not smart.
No, they're good. These aren't smart questions. Trust us. We came up with them. They're not smart questions.
It's all subjective questions.
So question number one.
What
is a movie you will stop and watch anytime it's on?
Probably Rear Window, Hitchcock.
Oh yeah, that's a great choice.
Yes. It is good.
Yes, and I actually got a few years ago, got a chance because... My client was Paramount Studios. I was on the lot for that and got a chance to see some of the original drawings where they did it. Yeah,
that's
the set was gorgeous.
I think it's one of my favorite things about that film is there are all these characters with no speaking roles.
Yes.
That you know so much about by the end of the film.
It's a voyeuristic detail. It's a classic character study and it's a beautiful movie.
It's an amazing film.
Yes.
Yeah. All right. Question number two: what is your geekiest or most prized possession?
The geekiest possession? They're two different things, right?
Well,
geekiest or most prized possession.
Well, my most prized possession would be, I think probably both of my prized possessions are my mechanical watches. I have two very beautiful, three now, beautiful and expensive mechanical watches. I'm a big fan of watches and the metaphor complications and all that stuff.
So. Yeah.
But tonight I'm wearing my geeky iWatch.
Oh yeah, tonight.
He's got an iWatch.
Yeah, but watches are a thing. I love it.
Yeah.
I remember on the last show, you used to collect alarm clocks, didn't you?
I still have them.
But I'm remembering back to that, and clearly that's something that's really a big thing for you is timepieces.
Specifically, why I
value bombs,
them.
Car?
No. Why I like mechanical watches and the craftsmanship of mechanical watches and the idea of complications is for me it speaks to this sort of life in general that the more complicated a thing becomes and when we can get it to work together the more beautiful it becomes and so more valuable it comes. When I work at the Renaissance Festival now, I'm always thinking about how everybody can work together to make this sort of thing tick. And I'm going to give something away here. If you see me at the festival wearing like a chronograph or a nice watch, I'm struggling with something and in the cast, I should probably not say this, but I'll wear that watch to remind me, one of my watches, my better watches to remind me that there's a mechanics at work here and to be cognizant of what I can do to make that work better.
I like that so much. I can't even tell you.
Only a few people know that.
It makes my heart go, oh.
That's great. If you ever come up and see the watch, you're wearing your watch, everything okay?
But clearly you don't want to talk about it.
No.
Yeah. Question number three is, which supernatural, magical, or all-powerful being do you wish was real?
God.
The Judeo-Christian God?
No.
I wish it was real. Not the harming thing, but I wish I honestly wish I could believe in something that I could requisite the universe and talk to. Like it would be, I'm not talking about the punishing God, but that there's some omnipotent being that I could have a personal relationship with.
The mostly New Testament God.
The buddy God.
And I know it's not true, but I wish I had that. Sometimes I wish I had that kind of faith in that thing, but I don't.
Would it have to be the Christian God, or would any God do?
Probably any God. You know, there's a lot of pretty hip gods that I could do, but you know.
I spent
the first 30 years of my life looking at all that stuff, and it didn't work out.
All right, so question number four. Say religion is gone. What is the biggest problem humanity now faces?
Community. How do we pull together around a common idea that isn't based on a... It's one of the things I think I talked about. I think the loss of Christianity, the loss of a God would be fine with me, but the gathering place around common ideas is something we haven't recreated yet in a humanistic way that I think we can, but we haven't gotten there yet. And I think there is a danger in not having some place where young people can, go through initiations and we can have common conversations, and we'll see.
So we should have a Hunger Games, is what you're
maybe
saying.
Maybe.
I think that would solve everything.
It's culture, community.
Yeah.
In relationship, though, I mean, if you look at it, what do we have? If you take away religion and people get together because we believe in these common things, how do we recreate that in a way that doesn't require a God or a belief in something beyond us or beyond life?
Mm-hmm. Okay? Interesting.
It is a challenge. That's I agree. Good. So the last question, the one that will probably be the hardest to come up with an answer for, what's your favorite quote?
Probably Thoreau's "Live to Live." Probably the one that stuck with me the longest in my life is Thoreau's notion of living deliberately to change the world. And it's in my head all the time. Like, be deliberate about what I'm doing, and it drives me daily. So when you asked me that earlier, the reason it didn't come up is that it's always there. So it's sort of omnipresent. It's everywhere. And then when I was talking in the middle of our conversation, it just popped in my head. I'm like, well, of course. That's okay. Huh.
Deliberately, like the timings of a watch.
Well, yeah, but living deliberately is to be, yeah, you know.
That's very much, but that kind of ties into what we're talking about. Taking responsibility for your actions, because yes. you're mm-hmm. living deliberately. Mm-hmm. Taking responsibility for your emotional reactions.
It's the way you change the world. Yeah. And Thoreau's notions that if you live deliberately, that's the way we change the world. And think about that. The notion of living deliberately as a way to change and to sort of confront the problems of our world is exactly what we talked about today. Living deliberately to me is not being a victim, it's being at cause about your life. And everybody in this room in some level has been a victim of something, right?
Yeah.
Except for Tim.
I was just a victim of my dad dying.
Yeah, that's pretty bad. Also, I've met your
too
wife.
Too soon.
Oh.
It's been 30 years.
Oh, too soon.
All right, Carl. Well, thanks for being our guest. Thanks for coming back again.
Hey, yeah, thank you.
I appreciate
awesome.
It.
Awesome. Fantastic. I love it. We'll just continue this conversation.
Is there a place they can, you want to pick up a site or anything?
No, not right now. I'm working on a new book that I'm excited about.
What's the book about?
Well, I won't talk about that.
All right. We'll talk about it later.
It's a secret.
Get
him back and we'll talk about the book.
We'll talk about it later.
Car's favorite dildos. Clockwork dildos.
Mechanical dildos.
Mechanical dildos.
That's going to be a thick
like you turn
hardcover.
A crank and it goes
wait a minute.
Beeper,
mechanical
beeper.
Dildo is kind of like a man in general, right?
Yeah.
There's a lot of complications to get that.
I think I've seen that guy at a fest.
Yeah. You're married to him, aren't you?
Yeah.
We've been Geeks Without God. I'm sure we... didn't say one or two things, important points that you have to make about trigger warnings, or you outright disagree with us, or agree with us, or whatever, please feel free to comment either on geekswithoutgod.com or on the Facebook post. We'd love to talk with you more about this.
Swear to us on Twitter.
Can you, the three of you, just say the C word? Because it really, I don't want to hear that
cunt?
Word.
Cunt?
No, C word.
Like Oceanside?
No, C word.
Crack?
You guys are terrible.
Charlie?
Car?
Don't drop an F-bomb.
but please, you know, like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter, give us a rating on iTunes, that'd be great. Otherwise, we will see you next Tuesday, which
cunt.
Spells cunt.
It spells cunt, that's the joke.
The initials.
See you later.
Trigger warning for those who have experienced trauma related to podcast endings. This episode is about to end.
We're geeks, we're geeks, we're geeks without God. Moral authority, we don't accept divine superiority. We're geeks, geeks without God.
Until next time, you can find us blogging and listen to past podcasts at geekswithoutgod.com. And you can follow us on Twitter at geekswithoutgod.
We're geeks, we're geeks, we're geeks without God. We're geeks, we're geeks, we're geeks without God. We're geeks, geeks without God.
Luckily, born with two buttholes.
Two buttholes.